You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. This is a combined Earn and Invest and Choose FI podcast recorded live at the Economy Conference. We decided to make the theme showing everybody how the sausage is made. So this was done in front of a live studio audience, and they got to see the behind the scenes, and now we're bringing it to you. So you're going to hear a lot of outtakes. You're going to hear a lot of information normally you wouldn't hear in this podcast, as well as some interviews. And finally, we end with about a 30-minute question and answer. So this is a little bit longer than your usual Earn and Invest podcast, but I hope you enjoy and get a window into what it's like to be at Economy and hear a live podcast. And now, the show. Going live on 3, 2, 1. This is how the sausage is made. Countdown, guest welcome to Earn and Invest. 3, 2, 1. Dude, welcome to the show. No. You're on Zoom. You've got to unmute yourself. I am so excited to have you as a guest on Earn and Invest today. Let me take a second to tell you how I run things. First and foremost, the goal is to run 40 to 50 minutes. Do you have a hard stop time? No? Good. Excellent. So then maybe we can run a little bit over. I want to remind you that this is going to feel like a live conversation. My hope is that you can feel like we are sitting in the coffee shop just talking about something that's important to us, but we happen to be recording it. Now, I say this is a live conversation, but the truth of the matter is it's not, and I can edit it. So if I ask a question which you don't want to answer, you can just say pass. Or if you start answering the question and don't like the way you're answering or get lost, just stop, take a breath, and start all over again. And I'm going to get rid of all that came before. Or if I ask a question and you want to think about how you want to answer it, pause as long as you want and then start answering it. And when I'm editing it, I'll get rid of all those pauses. Now, the reason I'm having you on the show is because you're spectacular. You're a great entrepreneur. Your financial independence history is amazing. You've done things that other people haven't done. So I come to this conversation with an arc of questions. I have a beginning and an end, and it's about 20 questions. But what I always tell people is don't worry about what you think I need out of the conversation. Like, I'm going to ask the questions, but you tell your story. You tell us what's most important to you, answer from your heart, and naturally, the good stuff will come out. This should be a fun conversation. If I'm doing my job right, at the end of this talk, you're going to say, boy, that was fun. Cut. Countdown, welcome, Choose FI on 3, 2, 1.
All right. So this is already more formal than I've ever had an entire podcast. as you can tell, Jordan is the pro. I'm just kind of making it up as I go along, essentially. So what's cool is we both had this concept of this is how the sausage is made. This doesn't have to be the perfect podcast, because I think how I record my podcast, and I try to really lower the stress level for every single guest, because honestly, I still get nervous. This is 650 episodes in, and the cool part about podcasting is, and I say this to everybody, I think most people don't understand the medium, because it doesn't just have to be hit record, talk for an hour, maybe take the ums and the ahs out, and hit upload, right? Like, I'm not trying to win investigative journalism awards. I'm trying to produce something quality and actionable for you, the community, literally every single time. That's all I care about. So what I say to my guests is, I don't care about looking silly to you. I'm invariably going to stumble over my words a dozen times, maybe more, especially in the intro. The intro is like the absolute hardest part of recording a podcast. It's like, it's crazy sometimes how many times I have to re-record it. And the cool thing is, because, so actually talking about like talent stack, right? We've talked about that on the podcast so many times. Jonathan's younger brother, Andrew, is actually our podcast editor. And I would argue he's more important to the podcast than I am at this point. Like, he is extraordinary. And what's funny is, like, I probably will almost do it out of habit, is I talk to Andrew throughout the episode. So I'll stumble over my words. Andrew, cut that out. Or, Andrew, I want to say that again. And what I say to the guests is, that extends to you, right? So if you are talking for a minute or two and you just don't love it and you have something better, okay, we'll just edit it. That never existed. Or, again, I'm not looking to impress anybody. If you have some aspect of your story that I just simply didn't ask about, just give me the question. We'll stop. I'll ask the question and we'll move on. Right? Like, that's what's so wonderful. When you use the guiding North Star as producing something quality and actionable for the audience, you can't go wrong. And that's why I kind of joke about getting nervous, but I don't get nervous anymore, because you can't screw it up when you're trying to produce something great for the community. So, kind of a little background on how we go about it. And again, Jordan is way more professional than I am, and way better, which is why he's going to drive this whole episode, which is great. I just sit back and I'll ask a couple questions here or there. But yeah, this should be fun. So thank you for being here.
Cut. Countdown to live show. Jordan intro on 3, 2, 1. I was burning out. I knew that I couldn't continue in medicine, and yet the one barrier was that I didn't have enough money. If I quit, how was I going to support my family? How was I going to have enough to not only last me for the next year or decade, but until retirement? And then I discovered Jim Daly, the white coat investor, and I read his book, and I knew I was financially independent. I was free. I could quit my job. And that's when, as you all know, the anxiety and depression set in. You see, this was 2014, and I knew I could leave medicine, and yet I didn't know how. What would I do? How would I fill my time? What sense of importance or identity would I have if I was not a doctor? You see, I knew what I needed to do, but like many of you, I didn't have the courage to do it. Cut. Cue music. Welcome, I am Jordan Grummet, a.k.a. Doc G, and sitting next to me, I have Brad Barrett of the Choose FI podcast, and this is a joint Choose FI Earn and Invest episode here live at the Economy Conference in 2024. Let's hear some noise. Today, we are going to talk about what happens when you know what you need to do, but you don't have the courage to do it. This is something I think all of us have faced. As you guys heard in my intro, it's something I'm intimately familiar with. Brad, I realized that I was financially independent in 2014. It took me till 2018 to eventually leave medicine. And that was only because I went to a Camp Fi and I bolstered myself up with all the people there who lent support to me. So tell me, Brad, have you ever had an episode like this in your life?
I have, but I'm going to ask you. So Camp Fi, what was there one conversation? Was it just like what happened in 2018?
So I had my groupie moment. You see, I knew Leif Dahlin, the physician on fire, was going to that Camp Fi. And I even wrote him before because he was a physician. He was an anesthesiologist. He was living the Fi lifestyle. He was talking about retiring early. And so I wrote him and I said, hey, I really look forward to talking to you when I get there. But what I found is it was through a series of conversations with multiple people, with Leif, with Gwen, who's here today, who is there at that Camp Fi, with so many different people. But what I got was the love and the support. So it was almost like, yes, this is a hard decision, but you can do that. You see, there's that guy over there and that woman over there and that couple over there, and they all face the same thing you're facing. And now 2 years later, they're living a life that's a lot more gratifying. So it was a series of conversations. And more important, Brad, it was the support of knowing that other people were there for me and I wasn't doing this alone.
Yeah. And I think that's what an event like this is all about, right? Getting together with people. And I find that accountability groups, they just matter so much. And sometimes a group, it doesn't have to be a formal thing. It can just be one or two people you met and had this fleeting conversation with, and you got their email address, right? Like, that's what we should be doing here at Economy. That's what we should be doing when we go to a local meetup, right? Try to find those people that you can connect with, because I've found, and you asked me a question, I'm not going to skate on by it here. I think, honestly, I'm experiencing that right now, literally as we speak. And I think I have kind of reached a point of self-induced burnout. And, you know, it's interesting. I've thankfully had some amazing conversations here with people. And I love doing this podcast. Love. I could have never imagined the value that it would bring to my life. Like, to have imagined 7 years ago that I would have a podcast was laughable. To imagine that I'd be sitting here in front of 500 people and not being frightened out of my life, essentially, would be utterly laughable. But I've found that this is where I find flow. And I could do this for the rest of my life very, very easily. I think I have taken on too much when it comes to Choosify, because I know how much it means to people and how much it has impacted. And I say every episode, send me emails. And I really, really want you to send me emails. But it kills me that I can't respond to all of them. I physically cannot do it. And I beat myself up. And when I log in, we have this Help Scout help desk thing. I could tell you exactly, I have 1,068 emails that I've curated as ones that are important to read and get back to you. As you can imagine, I'm not, you know, they keep piling up, right? So I think on some level, I have to be okay with doing what I can. And I think doing this podcast and writing my newsletter, which I also really enjoy, I think for all intents and purposes to the community, if I did those two things, which probably take me about 4 to 5 hours a week, that's adding value in the highest way I can. And it's all the other hours that I spend that are killing me, that are causing, you know, harm in my life in ways. And, you know, I'm being very open and honest here. And I think I've let it become unbalanced. And I think what I've come to realize is that it's not viable. It's not viable anymore. and I have to be honest with myself. And what's so cool again about this community is we have friends. We have people maybe we've never met before. I joined Jillian Johnsrud's Retire Often, her coaching program on mini retirements. And though I haven't been able to attend quite as many meetings as I would like, close to zero, unfortunately, but it just being part of it and seeing people talk in a WhatsApp group and chatting with Jillian has really emboldened me to take my first mini retirement. So this is something I'm pledging out loud here publicly in front of 500 of my friends. So yeah, I'm actually going to Bali for Amy Minkley's Five Freedom Machine.
I think it's really an important point, what Brad is bringing up, because what I did in my intro is I talked about the courage to use FI, financial independence, as a superpower. But what Brad is also talking about is the need for that courage never goes away. Just because you're financially independent doesn't mean that at times you're going to have the courage. You're going to know better in your brain, but knowing is different than doing. And one of the essential things Brad just talked about right now, which I hope you see as we all come together here, is what Brad did is he realized that having the courage to do what was good for him was going to be difficult. And so what did he do? He reached out to his community. And I think that's really like, you guys know, if you listen to my show, I usually tell you the grand message at the end, but today I'm going to tell you it in the beginning. If you really want the courage to do what you know is good for you, even if it's scary, even if you're stepping out of your comfort zone, this is your resource. And so Brad and I are not the only ones who struggle with having the courage to do what we need to do. So instead of just talking to us, the content producers, it's time we talk to some of you. So I'd like to welcome up onto the stage our first community guest, Roger, come on up. Beginning guest intro on 3, 2, 1. Roger is a good friend of mine. He's part of the Wealth with Purpose Mastermind, and we've spent a lot of time talking about not only what he, but what all of us want to do with our lives. Where do we want to go with ourselves? And Roger and I have had these long conversations about what he wants and what's standing in the way. So today we're going to talk about, for Roger, what's happening in his life. What does he know that he wants to do? And what is stopping him from having the courage to do it?
Roger, welcome. Thank you for coming up. Really appreciate it. And, sometimes it's hard to share what's going on in our lives, but I really appreciate you coming up here in front of so many people and doing this. And so I guess the obvious part is, let's start with your story. So tell us, give us the short of where are you today?
Yeah, so I'm an attorney out of Denver. I have a wife and two girls, 7 and 10. So this FIRE journey, I think I remember in maybe 2012, I was reading Mr. Money Mustache and his blog kept me up until 2 or 3 a.m. And I was thinking, is this person for real? He only gasses up his car twice a year. He spends $30,000. And so I've been on a journey, probably a decade long, to find you, essentially, to find who are these people in the flesh and ask them the questions of, what does it look like on the other side? I may have stalked Mr. Money Mustache's headquarters. I've gone to a camp
may
fi.
Have.
I've gone to a camp fi and a FinCon, and with the intention of asking some hard questions of people who have made that conversion to the other side. I think FI, financial independence, retire early, I think obviously RE is the clickbait of, we'd all love to, quote, stop working. And I think this journey has been fascinating because we don't know what's on the other side. It's hard to know what's on the other side. And I think I've come to the realization, our family, we are at 35 times our normal annual spend. So we are at that point of FI. what this feels like is like we've reached maybe first level black belt. And then I'm realizing like, oh shit, there's all this other stuff like lifestyle optimization, you know, cold plunges with Huberman or Ozambique and all these sorts of other things to kind of pursue. I have not left work. I have continued to work. So I'm a partner within a law firm. I manage groups and teams of folks. I feel an obligation to those teams of people. I am out there selling myself as a partner, and I work is part of my identity. And so the last few years, I've been trying to separate. I'm not what I do, but I am who I am. So that's not an easy thing.
Okay. A lot of things jumped out to me, but 35 times. Yeah, you do not, obviously. Hold on. Oh, Andrew, we're offline. You do not have to say any numbers that you, anything, clearly nothing will go on this podcast that you're not comfortable with. So let's be clear. If you want to talk about it, it's great. If not, no big deal.
I think it's sometimes helpful. I know this is a numbers crowd. I think numbers help for context. That's the only reason why I'm saying it.
Okay, cool. So Andrew, we'll keep that in. So 35 times, but yet it's still not a slam dunk, right?
Yeah, as Jordan and I have talked about, it's not necessarily a money issue. Two thoughts, right? Number one, so portfolio is like 90% equity, 10% bonds. My wife has a great like work remote job, okay, which earns six figures. I think part of this is just I don't know what I would do next. And I've tried to go through exercises to try to understand what that next might be, to be more self-aware of kind of the things that pique my curiosity and make me happy. But I haven't nailed that down. And I guess in the short run, so much of life, right, has been about financial optimization. The North Star has been money. And to take away that North Star is disorienting. And coupled with the fact that I have children, it not only feels I'm making the choice to not financially optimize life, right? The decision to walk away from work is a multi-million dollar decision. And as a parent with children, it somewhat feels irresponsible to say like, hey, actually, we can't do that X, Y, and Z because of resources. Part of me doesn't want to be in that position. But part of it is too, just the identity, the community, the status, the all these sorts of things that are wrapped up in the job.
Yeah, I wonder, it's interesting, right? So, because it's multi-layered. Do you honestly believe that your children will think you're irresponsible?
I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to know what they need. I will say that I'm often missing dinner. I'm coming in for, you know, 20 or 30 minutes when they're about to go to bed, just being able to basically say goodnight to them, which is obviously, sorry, I'm choking up a little bit. Yeah. It's less than ideal. It's less than ideal. It's weird. I've had an 18-year career to walk away, as Doc Chi knows, like from medicine or law. It is something you don't really return back to. I've built a practice. That step off the cliff is a steep one, yeah, and a scary one.
Yeah.
I'm sure the girls would like more time, yeah, more dad. So,
no, and I certainly appreciate how difficult it is. I think it's so easy to get caught up in, look at how much money I'm foregoing, right? But the way that I look at this season of life for me is, my daughters at this point are 15 and 12. And it's almost kind of morbid to think about it in this way, but by the time they are 18 years old, that will be 90% of the time that I will have ever, that I will ever get to spend with them. So it's essentially 5% per year of all the time that I will ever spend with them. And what I've done at this point is I literally have a countdown to, I open up every morning when I open my computer, I open up Notepad. And now, thanks to Microsoft and how wonderful it is, they open up the most recent thing. And I literally have a countdown that says Anna. And at this point, it says about 880 days. And Molly is somewhere around 2000. And that countdown is to August 15th of the year they go to college. And that is it. Okay? And I know how hard it is. But what it does is it helps inform how I live my life. So I've had so many conversations about roller coasters here this this weekend. It's essentially all I think about and talk about now, thanks to my daughter. But so I am a roller coaster enthusiast in knowledge. But what happens is at 9 o'clock at night, when I'm ready to go to sleep, because frankly, that's my bedtime, she wants to talk about roller coasters and I want to go to sleep. But I know that on August 16th, 2026, I will give anything for her to be sitting on that couch asking me to talk about roller coasters and to imagine that I would give up anything, going to sleep or going to work or whatever it may be, to not have that conversation with her when I know for an absolute fact, 2 years and 5 months from now, that I will give anything for that time back. That centers you. That means something. And to me, that means so much more than what society thinks or what the neighbor thinks. And believe me, I get it. I really genuinely do. And I know how hard it is. And I think it's almost, again, it's this group. It's finding accountability. It's even finding solace in the numbers, right? Like, it is essentially like a metaphysical certainty that you have enough money, especially if your wife continues to work in some way, right? Like, you know, I'm not advocating that, but nevertheless, like, you're there.
You're operating off the presumption that I want to spend time with my children.
Cut. No.
And that's a wrap.
All seriousness, Roger, on a scale of 1 to 10, Roger, how much do you love your job?
Gosh, there are elements that I enjoy.
Stop explaining.
Scale to 1 to 10.
And let's... after that, I'm going to warn you.
Yeah.
After that, I want you to tell me on a scale of 1 to 10, how much you love your children.
It's for the value that we can sell them at, but I'm kidding. We'll cut that one. I agree with your point, and I know after the FI conversation, it's usually the die with zero conversation of...
No die with zero, the taking stock conversation.
Yeah. What is the, Perkins
what is,
be damned.
What is this die with zero? What are you talking
small
about?
The purpose. I agree. Life is limited. I think an element of this, I mean, and Dokchi has like identified this. It's not about the money. There's other like issues, right? And it's that disorientation, not with money, but also with the who I am question, right? Okay. Right now, all of you in the audience know more about my finances than my parents do. I had a conversation with my parents over the holidays. I've been pursuing this FIRE thing for a decade, have not really come out of the closet with them. And I told them like over the holidays, like, and I think they were a bit in disbelief. I've never talked about it with them. They were kind of like, what do you mean? And I think, so one, it was a positive milestone in sort of shedding that layer of expectation, of responsibility. But hopefully kind of set a course of like, well, now this is a hurdle that I've overcome. Yeah.
Do you think you've overcome it?
My therapist says I have.
What do you think?
By the way, Doc G and I are sharing a room, and
maybe not anymore. I might get kicked out. He might not let me back in.
Little spoon, big spoon.
He has his own bed.
To the question of have I overcome it, I think it's a continual work in progress. I think what I am doing is continually, as a risk-averse person, comparing and contrasting, is that the life I want? Is that the life I want? And could this be different? That's part of the reason why I come here, so I can see people who have made that transition and hope to kind of understand if it's one that I want for myself.
Yeah. So, Roger, I had a really interesting conversation at lunch, and the question went around the table, tell us one really interesting thing about you that you do that is totally unrelated to work. I want you to think about that, and I want you to share it. And I know it kind of sounds off the wall, but I think you need to stop thinking of yourself in terms of this is me and my career, and start picturing what does a Phi life look like? I mean, you have the entire world of options. You have essentially unlimited money. You have time resources. You have a family. You have all these things. You have knowledge and skills. What does that look like? But even start, don't start with the analytical part. Start with, what's something you love to do? Like if we were sitting around five of us, what's something cool that you do for fun? Don't overthink it. Just what's something really interesting that nobody knows about you that you do?
I'm thinking of two things. One, I enjoy catching people lying. That's...
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, we can't move past that. Oh, come on. I mean, Jesus, what are we doing here? How do you get that as a skill? Where is it? Like,
as an attorney, I'm talking with clients, kind of understand their fact pattern and trying to decide, wait, does that line up with how I understand things to be? Sometimes they're misrepresenting things and figuring that out and communicating with their employer if and when appropriate. That's just a broad way of stating it. Anyways, I like to be able to discern this, right? Like it's a funny and fascinating thing. The other thing I really enjoy is talking to strangers, which is why I'm here. And I enjoy having awkward conversations with strangers.
So. You're welcome.
Stand-up comedy. He doesn't know it, but stand-up comedy is what he wants to do. The truth of the matter is we don't expect we're going to solve these problems today. But the reason why we wanted Roger to come up and talk about these things is because it's hard. It's really hard. Sometimes our brains kind of know that something's wrong or know we want to get from A to B, but we don't know how. And the reason I want you all to hear Roger is because right now I want you to all stand up and clap for him because he just did the ultimate act of vulnerability. And Roger, these are your people. These are the people who are going to help you figure out what it looks like and how it can get better.
Yeah.
And that's why we're here today. Everybody, Roger. And that was just guest one.
Oh, my God.
I am going to bring up our second guest now. Allison, I met for the first time just literally 2 days ago. We were at the Thursday event. I walked by her on the patio at the bar. Not only did her smile light up the room, but she said something to me that made me stop and listen. And let me tell you, I've heard just about everything. I'm not just a podcaster, but a doctor. I talk to people about crazy stuff. And yet she stopped me in my tracks. Allison, I walked up to you when we were talking and you said, look, I feel comfortable talking for and working for billionaires. I feel comfortable talking and working for movie stars, rock stars, But you know what the one thing I don't feel comfortable doing? Coming to a Phi event. Allison, explain yourself.
Thank you for the introduction. I think that I've been thinking about this since you posed the question, and I don't know if as humans, if we can necessarily distinguish between being in the company of world titans and the anxiety of overcoming giving advice on how to raise their children and educate them versus being in a new environment. Like, I've been part of the Phi community for 20 years as a longtime podcast listener, reader of literature, and this is my very first event.
So Allison's previous job, we can't talk about it other than to say she was a nanny for the stars. People you all would know, household names. Not a single Phi ever talked to a Phi person. So you've been following this way longer than I have, right? 20 years. Had you ever talked to a financial independence person, anyone who knew about this before?
Not in person.
And what did you think was going to happen? Like, in your brain, what did you build up was going to happen when you came here? What did you expect?
I had a brief conversation with our amazing organizer, Diana, earlier. We love Diana. And I said that my anticipation of coming to a brand new community in person was that I was just kind of going to be a wallflower the first time out and just, you know, watch all the longtime people interact. And maybe my second economy, I would, you know, start interacting and making friends. Certainly not right off the bat being part of a podcast.
Did you think people were going to be nice to you?
I thought people would be cordial. But I thought that people would have their longtime friends and that there would be a hierarchy that I wouldn't necessarily be a part of immediately. And I have to say, I'm a natural skeptic. I overthink everything. I'm a minimalist. I have four of these same outfits to take away decision fatigue. And I honestly was very surprised by being in this community and feeling so welcome and the lack of ego. And just once I figured, like, oh, I started talking to people on Thursday night and they were pretty welcoming. And one of them was a major person in the community, which is Jordan. And then I talked to Brad and I talked to some other folks. And it just made me feel like, well, I guess I can talk to anybody here. And that was really surprising to me, because I think that typically there's a barrier of entry to being in a community, and I haven't found that here, and I'm still pretty perplexed by it, honestly. I'm looking for the bad apples and I can't find them.
So imagine this. The first Phi person she met is she knew she was coming in the airport and didn't have a ride. So who picked her up at the airport? Josh Overmeyer. Can you imagine a better ambassador for the financial independence community than having Josh Overmeyer be the first person you met?
I'm very fortunate.
So looking back, are you a little bit sad that you weren't able to maybe take the action earlier? So we're talking today about when we know what we want to do. And clearly you knew you were connected to financial independence and you wanted to be part of this community, but it took you quite a long time to get here. Are you thinking back now going, wow, I should have done this 10 years ago?
I do think that I should have been part of an in-person event sooner. That being said, my last 20 years were marked by a really intense work schedule where I'm not sure how many opportunities I would have had to be part of a event like this without a lot of logistics and planning. So I tend to think better late than never. But of course, I would have liked to do it earlier. Yeah, it's just it's amazing how I'm 44 and things can still surprise you. So that's been great.
What would you tell? So there are going to be people listening to this on Earn and Invest, people listening to this on Choose FI, people who, like you, have been lurking in this community, but it felt a certain amount of fear about getting involved. What would you tell them?
I would say that if your anxiety level is higher than mine, then that's a that's unusual. And I think you should go for it, because one of my goals for moving into a, you know, post-fi space is being part of a community and finding meaning that way. And I think that it's been difficult to take the leap, but I would absolutely advise anybody to try it. And I'm the biggest skeptic in the world, so I'm happy to be on this new journey. I've had my identity be as a teacher and a celebrity nanny for a very long time, and I haven't done a lot of else with my adult life, and now all these options are opening up. So if you're somebody that is looking for a completely new way of living, then I would go for it.
Allison, we're talking about like new chapters in life and finding those points, right? And it seems like this is that, in essence, like line of delineation, right? Like before and after, which is really pretty wild when you think about it. You come to a 3-day conference and like it feels like a sea change.
Yeah.
Where do you go from here? Where do you go from here in your life, in your next chapter? Like, you know, we always talk on Choose Up I about taking action, right? Like what comes out of an event like this?
I think that when I initially came to this event, I have a half-written book, Nest Egg Nanny, and I have thought about, you know, do I want to contribute to the space by talking about financial principles and you know, kind of throwing my hat into the ring that way? And I think I still want to do that, but I think that coming to this conference has changed probably the way that I want to do that. I don't necessarily think that our community needs more people talking about budgeting and spreadsheets and a lot of the things that have been covered to the nth degree in this community. I think our community needs more people that talk about their background and their stories and have vulnerability and take the chance to say, I don't necessarily know what's next, but I'm okay with being part of a community and figuring that out in the context of this community. And that's what I'd like to try to do.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's the nice part about our community is there is a space for people who are interested in new voices. Like, I absolutely love that. And I'm curious, like on a personal level, what's up next? You know, to steal from my good friend Jordan here, like what does life look like for you now? I'm assuming you're at Phi, but that's just an assumption. Talk to me, where are you in life? Where do you go from here?
So I hit Phi in 2020, but I continued to work for a few more years. And I have been outside of my job for almost a year now. And I am still figuring that out. You guys caught me at the pivotal moment. I'm a marathon runner. I'm a musician. I'm a minimalist. I'm into Phi. But I still am looking for that next thing. So I don't know if that's a... It's a little bit scary to say that I don't know. And I think that part of the reason to come to a conference like this is to get some seeds to maybe figure that out. Yeah, I hope to find that answer. I never imagined being at a place in life where I didn't have the structure that I had as a child and in my work life, and to be able to have the option to even consider something like this. And while part of me is elated, part of me is absolutely terrified. Yeah.
Please, everybody, if you're interested in supporting Allison and being less terrified and taking action in the next steps of her life, will you stand up and give her a round of applause?
Thanks, guys. Okay.
Cut. Doc G's outro. Well, Allison and Roger, I really wanted to thank you for being on the show today. The reason why I wanted to highlight your stories is I don't want to make light of things. This is not easy. The decisions you make, even to pursue financial independence, are not easy. But even getting past that, you still have to take action in your life. I had to go to Camp Phi to take action in my life. Brad, even recently, had to go back to our common friend, Jillian Johnsrud, and get part of her mastermind and her coaching to take action in his life. When you look at the people sitting around you, these are the people who are going to help you do what you need to do now and in the future. And that is a wrap. Cut. Brad Barrett, Choose FI, outro on 3, 2, 1.
All right, I'm going to take the easy way out. Andrew, reuse what Doc G just said. That was amazing. I can't top that.
Earn and Invest is now part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to this show as well as other fine podcasts.
You know what? I love our meals from Factor. My son started getting them about a year ago when he needed a quick alternative to meals on the go. But where we've really enjoyed them is we've been remodeling our kitchen. That's right, we've had no access to our kitchen for the last few weeks. And some nights we just had no idea what to do for a meal. That is where Factor came in. We would just pop the meal in the microwave and 2 minutes later, we'd have a fantastic meal. You can do the exact same thing, and there's tons of variety. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week. These are chef-prepared meals, and let me tell you, they are delicious. No fuss, no mess. You just put it in the microwave, and 2 minutes later, you have a meal. This is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Head to factormeals.com/earn50 and use your code EARN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code EARN50 at factormeals.com/earn50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/earn. That is linkedin.com/EARN for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/earn and get started. All right. As the after show, we are going to do a question and answer. William McVeigh is going to carry around a mic, and you guys are going to get a chance to ask us, either Brad or I, any question about FI, podcasting, or whatever have you. All that I ask is that you tell us your name and tell us who you want to answer the question. And this will become the after show. Unfortunately, we can't record your voices because that external mic he's carrying around doesn't record. So we are going to repeat each question, and then we're going to answer it. Please raise your hand if you have questions for either Brad or I.
So yeah, Andy asked essentially, what does my week look like? How many hours am I spending on this? And just like a general framework, kind of getting at the heart of what is the overwhelm, in essence, as I'm hearing it. I guess, you know, for me, it's funny because I've just like you guys, I know all the right things to do. But sometimes it's hard to actually do them. So I've listened to every productivity expert. Take a diary of what you do every week and yada, yada, yada. You just do all this stuff, right? I don't do any of it. I know I should, but so I think for me, Andy, it's just a mental overwhelm. Because I think if I'm actually honest with myself, I'm not actually working more than 15 to 20 hours a week. But it's more Parkinson's law, right? It's like the work swells to fit the time you have allotted. And when you sit in front of a computer for X number of hours, you kind of conflate that with working. And I think I need to truly be more intentional. So, I mean, listen, it's funny because when I actually look objectively at my life and my week, it's fantastic. Like, I mean, absolutely fantastic. I'm going to the gym 8 hours a week. I get to spend time with my family. I go to the sauna a couple of times. Like, my life is amazing. But yet, that's like objectively. But the internal sense, a lot of times, is overwhelm. So that is my lived experience. And I think it's because I've allowed it to backslide to that point where maybe I try to take on too much. And it's funny because as I hear myself saying that, it's like, oh, poor me, you have too many people writing you to say, oh, you changed my life. Like, oh, poor me, you know, like, give me a break. But I feel this compulsion to write, like, people pour their hearts out to me. And it's really legitimately hard to respond to all these things. And like, I wish I had a better way to do it. And I don't. And it honestly eats me up inside. And I think at some point I just need to come to the conclusion that I can't do it. I can't possibly do it because it's causing an imbalance in my life. And I think you need to find areas that light you up. And for me, this podcast, all my self-deprecating, ridiculous jokes aside, I love podcasting. I love it. Like, there's something about this that just energizes me. I get to sit here and talk to super interesting people and ask questions. Like, it's like my dream. It's amazing. But I let all the other stuff overwhelm me. And I think, again, part of a community is finding people that can put it in perspective, that can give you advice, that maybe they've been there. They're a couple steps ahead, no matter who you are, right? Like Jordan said, just because we're at Phi doesn't mean our lives are unicorns and rainbows all the time. Like, it's just not. I mean, it's not the human experience. And this is really important for every single person here to understand. Like, just because you reach a number on a screen does not mean your life is unicorns and rainbows. I mean, it can be fantastic, obviously, and it's so much better than if you hadn't pursued Phi. Nobody's arguing that. But you really need to be intentional. And just the way, I don't know, entropy maybe, like, you know, there's a state of disorder that comes when you're not intentional. And I think I've allowed that to happen for too long. And, you know, I kind of mentioned in passing before that my plan is to take a mini retirement towards the end of this year, which is really 2 or 3 months where I just take a step away. And I'm just really super excited about that. So yeah, that's kind of where I am. You bet.
Thank you for that wonderful question. So the question is, Phi is evolving and move from austerity towards lifestyle design. And your question to us is, where do we think it's going? I most definitely think we are moving away from the basic original five principles. And this is what happens with movements. You start with the original hardcore beliefs, and then young people come in and iterate. And it's cleansing, it's natural. And what should happen is continuously new content producers, thought leaders will come in and they'll bring new ideas and they will build and take a concept that was good and make it better and eventually great. And that is exactly what happened with FI. I mean, the old version of financial independence, front-loading the sacrifice, grinding it out and retiring as fast as possible from a job you didn't love and then finding yourself, has really changed to a story where we're starting to look at what does our best life look like today and building a financial framework around it. And I see the conversation really moving to the point, and none of you are going to believe this, where money starts becoming less relevant. Because financial independence, A, is a state of mind, and B, there's lots of ways to get to financial independence. Only the first way is to front load the sacrifice and get to that net worth number. But doing the passion play and going for what you love doing and making a living doing that for the next 50 years may be your path to financial independence. Or working on those side hustles and passive income and working very part-time for the next 30 or 40, 50 years may be someone else's version of what a good life looks like. So we're really moving to a place where we're talking about things like purpose and identity, and we're talking about building these communities. And that becomes the FI, not the number and not the net worth.
Yeah. Yet again, I'm not sure I can top that, but it's beautiful. Like how he talks like that. It's astonishing. Yeah. I mean, for me, I think clearly front loading the sacrifice is dead. I think FIRE, the RE, is an absolute distraction. And that's why we have been very intentional at Choose a Vibe for 7 years now that the retire early is ridiculous. I mean, I can count on one hand the number of people who have retired early and sat on a beach and done nothing, right? Because if you have the wherewithal to reach financial independence decades early, you're not going to sit around and be unproductive. So I think moving away from like, oh, the FIRE movement is bad. Like every time I see that, I want to like strangle someone in essence. Like it's a caricature. It's preposterous. Like is there any world where you are worse off having pursued financial independence? There is no world. So any of these bozos who want to talk about this in the media, like, oh, the FIRE movement is terrible. Like, it's because you're focusing on the wrong thing. You're focusing on this preposterous retire early. That is a caricature and always has been, because nobody does that, right? So like, we have tried to Choose a Vibe for a very long time to make this something that is approachable for everybody. And I think that's why, you know, we moved away from the extremism to you find financial independence where it fits in your life. And I think, frankly, frugality will always have a place. If anything, I feel like I've moved too far away from the messaging of frugality, because it is very important at the beginning of your journey. Because honestly, for most people, if they are coming into this community or world living paycheck to paycheck, they have to make changes, right? Like we have to be honest with ourselves. And sometimes I think it means smarter choices, but frugality is part of that. And then as Alan Donegan, who's sitting here in the front row, and when we had the pillars of FI and we left out entrepreneurship and earning more money and salary negotiation, you layer all of this stuff on top, right? But it starts with getting the fundamentals right and building a life based on spending on what you value. And I think that is a universally applicable message for everybody. And I think you ask, where do we go from here? I think honestly, this event is a perfect example, right? Like community is where we go. Because this means something to all of you. That's why you're here, right? You took 4 days, 5 days out of your your life to come to this conference that you can't even explain to people. What the hell are we doing here, right? Like, I mean, and spend a good bit of money traveling. But it's because it means something to you, right? And how do we bring that home to our local communities? And, you know, we've tried for a very long time to create these Choosify local groups. And, you know, yet again, I'm hard on myself. But, you know, like, we haven't done the greatest job from, like, Choosify to help those. I can't help it. I can't help it. Come on. To help those succeed. But that's something that, like, I really want to help. And I ask all of you to help build the communities that you want to see. This doesn't just have to be 3 or 4 days on one weekend. You can build this in your community. And I see people like Kristen here sitting in the front row who's doing this, right? Like, I see Vanessa who's done this in New York City. And, like, it's remarkable. People just step up. You have to be that change that you want to see in your local community. You have to step up. We have, I mean, Diana, who literally runs this conference, has basically revolutionized, and the Cincinnati group, frankly, has revolutionized what we have going on in local groups with the case studies. And now, I know we have our local admin, Emily, sitting here. Like, we've had 3 case studies in Richmond. People who were brave enough to stand up and talk about their personal finances in front of their friends and neighbors. And the second person who did that, literally, as I understand it, realized, oh, wow, I'm at FI and I'm stepping away from my job. I mean, how cool is that, right? Like, and you can do that. We can make that change happen. So I get a little long-winded, obviously, as you can tell, but community. And we can do that. So thank you.
So the question is, and thank you very much for that thoughtful question, is how do I, as a physician, reconcile the fact that society paid a certain amount to get me, to allow me a medical education and to co-practice, and also how I step away from that identity of being a physician? So let's talk about the price of becoming a doctor. It is true, our society does pay a certain amount of taxes that go to Medicare, that support residency programs, et cetera. I worked 80 to 90 hours a week for 3 years. I took care of patients who died in my hands and felt guilty and sad and afraid and lonely and lost. I became the shell of a person I was. I lost my sense of humor. I lost my sense of patience. I carried each and every patient with me for all those years. There is no price that society paid that was worth doing that. I did it because I had the drive and interest and empathy to do it. But when I was done, there was no amount of money society could have paid to train me that would have been a fair exchange for what that felt like. I have no regrets about leaving medicine. I have no sense of feeling that I owe society something. I gave my heart and soul and almost every moment of my day for 20 years. I took phone calls at 3 and 4 in the morning. I worked on almost every major holiday. I worried about each and every patient, and I will never sleep comfortably knowing that I could have done better for some of these patients, and I didn't. So am I guilty about that? No, but I also feel like I don't owe society anything. I gave it my best. When it comes to identity, it's a little easier for me because the identity of being a physician never really sat well with me. And so I was kind of ashamed and embarrassed of being a doctor, which should have really told me that it wasn't the right identity for me. But I've been thinking a lot about our concept as people of enough. And I think we all cling to these external identities that don't fit us because we're so struggling to feel enough in life. And the problem is, doing something that doesn't fill your soul and doesn't fit you will never make you feel enough. Like, that's something that has to come from the inside, and it certainly doesn't come from doing things that stress you out or make you feel anxious, or things that you are embarrassed or too shy to tell people you do. And so for me, yes, there was some walking away from status and certainly some walking away from income. On the other hand, waking up every day and not carrying that burden anymore has relieved me of some of that fear of loss of status. And thankfully, when I was able to embrace things that felt more intentional and authentic to me, I have a whole different sort of identity and status that actually feel a lot better. Like I was saying the other day, and I've said this a few times on the podcast, when I Google my name and the descriptor comes up writer, I feel more pride than I've ever felt in being a doctor. It actually lights me up. And I never had that up until this point in my life. And so I would make that exchange every day without a doubt and without regret.
That's a great question. So to kind of summarize, the question is generally about charitable giving and I guess both in our personal lives, but the Phi community generally. And it's funny because we're recording this at Economy, and when this goes live in our podcast, it'll be after the fact, obviously. But this coming Monday, so literally, I guess, 27, 28 hours from now, we have an episode going live precisely on this. So you couldn't have timed this better if you possibly. And it's actually, it's wonderful. It's on effective giving. And I think it's really going to resonate with the Phi community specifically, because obviously a lot of us are analytical. And I thoroughly enjoyed recording this episode. And it made me rethink charitable giving. And, you know, honestly, I don't have a perfect answer for you right now on what charitable giving looks like for me going forward, but I think it clearly looks different after this episode. And I suspect a lot of you in the audience and in the larger audience will have a similar, I guess, impact based on this episode. So we had two people come on. Actually, one of our local group admins in, I think, Ogden, Utah, Rebecca, and a gentleman named Jack, who was a executive director, I think, of One for the World. It's a essentially effective altruism, effective giving organization. And I think for me, our giving has always been very haphazard. And it's, hey, a friend has some type of charity. We'll give $50, $100, $200. Or, oh, we love clean up the James River in Virginia. So we're going to give to that. And it always, we'll give to our universities a little bit, whatever. But again, it was just very, very haphazard. And it didn't feel, and it frankly hasn't felt like it was making any type of difference. And I mean, to be perfectly honest, I've always felt a little guilty that we haven't given more. But not to repeat myself endlessly, but I think this episode made me realize that there is a better way to have a conceptual framework around charitable giving. And for the first time, I'm actually excited about, okay, I can do some research on this. I can find these organizations that, almost like how J.L. Collins has helped me figure out investing, like these organizations help me figure out giving. And, you know, that's my personal takeaway. I don't suspect, and that's not to say, obviously, goes without saying, that all local giving is bad. I'm not arguing that in any way, shape, or form. But I think having some type of framework will be useful. So long story short, just listen to the episode on Monday. I think it's going to be good.
I'll actually start, and then I think Brad will chime in. So I believe the question was, when we encounter someone maybe outside of the financial independence community, or we're interacting with them and maybe telling them about this, how do we help them be introduced to the community and understand that there's both a math and a psychology part, and help integrate that in such a way that we can have a productive conversation? I guess I look at it, I hate to say it, I look at it this very similar to the way I look at dealing with hospice patients. And so we have a saying in hospice is you have to meet people where they are. And so a lot of what I found about dealing with people who don't understand financial independence, but yet they're talking to us about financial pain, and we clearly see an answer, but we know they're not there yet, is you really have to see where they are. And so some people innately will understand the psychology and not the numbers. So if you meet them where they are and work first on the psychology, you may have an in to eventually work on the numbers. On the other hand, if you meet someone and they're much more the numbers and not the psychology, then you meet them where they are and get deep into the numbers and then move towards the psychology. Unfortunately, often we meet people who aren't about the numbers or the psychology, but they're under stress. And this is where I think we have to not give up. This is where we have to make ourselves available and open and say, hey, we've discovered this thing. You might not be, you know, ready to hear about it now, but I think it'll be helpful. And they might not be ready for it today or tomorrow, but maybe when their pain gets more, or maybe when they're open-minded, they'll remember that you had a solution and could help them, and they might come to you when they're more ready. And then you can meet them where they are again then. And hopefully they're at a different place where they might be ready to start talking about these things.
Yeah, I think as a lot of us have determined, there's no easy answer for this, right? And we do the best we can. And I think by being open, and I look for like little clues of people talking about random things, like even simple things like, oh, I don't know, 401k, or I clip coupons, or yeah, that's kind of antiquated, but anybody talking about some way of optimizing, like, okay, this might be someone who's open to this now. I'm not trying to change people's mind. And I think when we start standing up on soapboxes and trying to pontificate about how amazing we are, I mean, come on, like, who wants to do that, right? So, and people don't want to listen. That's not what we're doing here. We're not trying to convert people. But I think we can help people, right? And I think by providing an example and being there for people, I've had people kind of, obviously it's a little different, right? People know I have this podcast, but I mean, people have asked me for help when I don't think they would have felt comfortable. And it's been really gratifying to help people in my own friend circle. Like, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of people wait until the very last minute when they're like at this point of terrible stress. But nevertheless, I think to your question, it's a little bit of everything, because I would almost even, I knew you were talking about like maybe scoffing at, oh, it's just the big three. But I would even say sometimes the little things are the big things when it comes to making habit changes, right? Like, you don't start selling your house and moving 1,000 miles away, right? Like, you can start by, hey, if your cell phone costs $100 a month, hey, I just changed to whatever, Mint Mobile, and it's $20 a month. And, oh, there's no downside to this. I'm saving $80 a month. And you see, okay, I can start making these changes. It's fun. And, wow, my bank balance is going up every month. Oh, what else can I look for? I think, like, to me, it's like that little change. And as we know, getting into the numbers, right, like every $100 per month that you cut out of your budget is literally $30,000 less you need in your financial independence number. That sounds crazy, right? But super simple. $100 a month times 12, $1,200 a year times 25 is $30,000, right? So, I mean, the little things can be the big things. If you have somebody, a friend, or even you, who has, I hate to harp on the cell phone thing, but like two expensive cell phones, move them somewhere, right? And like, if you did that for a couple, it could be a $200 savings. That's $60,000 less you need in your fine number. So the little things can be the big things, both in terms of the numbers and the psychology. So I think for me, it starts with those little changes, and then it goes from there. All right. Jordan's being kind and giving this to me for some reason. So yeah, the question, I guess, is how does it feel to be a little celebrity in this community? Yeah. Okay. It is bizarre. It's wonderful and weird all at once. So I've jokingly said, I'm going to go home on Monday. I'm going to roll into town at 3 o'clock. And literally no one on earth will care that I'm alive, in essence. Like, nobody. My, you know, family will say hello to me real quick and that'll be that. But yet when I come here, I literally have hundreds of people. I have like a line of people waiting to talk to me sometimes. Like, it's obviously kind of bizarre. But it's amazing to think what a difference this crazy podcast that we decided to start in like a spare office in Richmond, Virginia, what an impact on the world that's had in 7 years. And, you know, sometimes it almost feels like I'm like, it's like the aw shucks moment, like, oh, you know, like, but it's just, it is bizarre. It is hard to wrap my mind around. And I don't think you guys will ever know how much I appreciate when you come up and tell me what a difference this made. Because coming to Economy last year really reinvigorated me. Because, you know, the COVID era and the impact that it had kind of on behind the scenes on our business, and, you know, Jonathan leaving the podcast, even though everything's wonderful and he's, you know, we're still great friends. I mean, those were big changes. And, you know, there was a very easy out for me at that point. Right. And coming here and seeing that not only did people find Choose FI back in the, you know, in my mind, the glory days of 2018, 2019, I just arbitrarily made that up. But that people are still finding it today, and it's really making a difference. It's really something. It's really something special. So, yeah, thank you.
So I don't feel like a celebrity sitting next to this guy over here. I would sum it in literally one sentence. It is a privilege to speak and be heard. And that is a wrap.
Thank you, everybody.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
The corporate world is like the ocean. It's alluring, but it's also full of deadly creatures that can shred you to pieces.
It becomes kind of like a Game of Thrones political arena where everyone's trying to murder you to get your job.
My family doesn't come from corporate background, so I didn't have any sort of guidance in that.
This is not your typical work podcast.
Sometimes you need to be empathetic. And then there are times that you ask for input, but you don't really give a shit.
Listen to the Ambi Award-nominated podcast, Surfing Corporate.
Stretch opportunity. What is this, yoga class? Get out of here.